Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Speedy Digest tonight, as we have a lot of news topics around the NASCAR world to discuss, and should be a fun show tonight as we all are pretty much fired up. But first of all, before we get into everything, how are you guys all doing tonight, and how was your week last week since we didn't have a show, and just talk a little bit about what you guys did, starting with Glenn.
Well, for me, I'm doing pretty good. I've been sign spinning all this month, and so, you know, I've been recovering from that, and also just started back at college again, you know, got into my class. But the good news is that, you know, here I am with, you know, all the latest news and notes from IndyCar and F1, and, you know, I am not out at Fontana Speed, Auto Club Speedway this year, but hopefully next year I'll get to see everybody out there, and if not now, then I'll definitely see all the fans at Long Beach.
Yes.
Well, I'm sick right now, Brett. I got sick at Riverhead covering the racing Saturday night, but I think I have to spend some time getting to know Ryan Preece over the past 2 weeks. Just hanging out, interviewing him last weekend, and talking to him this past weekend. So it was definitely nice, and I spent a lot of time over there the past 2 weeks, which is a great experience, obviously. But, yeah, I'm sick right now, and I have class tomorrow, just like Glenn. But I'm ready to talk some NASCAR.
I am too. You know, it's been a long 2 weeks. I spent some time at the fair. On Monday, I went to the Royals game, and then I'm also going to the Royals game tomorrow. And actually, while I'm doing this show, I'm actually also watching the Royals game over here on the TV. So, you know, it's been an interesting week, and I'm going to talk some racing, too. And, you know, there's certainly been lots to talk about, and certainly can't wait to do so. And I think we're also joined by Kyle as well. And, Kyle, just talk a little about some stuff you did, you know, the past 2 weeks since we didn't have a show.
First off, guys, thanks for having me. You know, it's been a busy month of August for me. You know, I started with Pocono at the Spring Cup Series race in August. You know, I know Joseph was there mainly, but, I gave him a hand when I could. And then I was at Watkins going through the whole thing with AJ Allmendinger winning. But, you know, it's been an interesting month. You know, so much has happened in all the divisions in NASCAR. I mean, Spring Cup, Nationwide Trucks. You know, there's been so many storylines. And, you know, it seems every day there's just another story coming out. And it's been like that craziness for the past, like you said, the last couple weeks. It's been nuts.
Yeah, and Kyle showed me the whole time of Pocono, making fun of my accent.
You know I'm jealous of that. Don't even go there.
Yeah, who's your favorite ARCA driver, Justin?
Justin Boston.
Oh, gosh.
All right, boys.
Hey, you brought it up, so.
Hey, girls. All right, first news.
All right, let's do
this. Big news this afternoon from Turnstile Motorsports, which, you know, possibly, but it's more than like it's happening that they're shutting down at least one of their trucks this weekend, which is unfortunately the number 30 of Ron Hornaday, but they plan on racing the number 31 with Ben King and number 32 with Cameron Haley. And first off, I'm going to go to Joseph to give us his thoughts on the situation.
Yeah, so basically what's happening is Steve Turner and Harry Scott, they're not getting along too well. It's sort of like how you've seen in the past with Teresa Earnhardt and Chip Ganassi and all these other disputes from owners. Basically, what appears to be happening is Turnstile Motorsports is splitting up. Steve Turner is going to take control of the Truck Series team like he used to have, and Harry Scott is going to take over the Nationwide team, and they're going to split, basically. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. But Ron Hornaday, as of now, he's out ride for at least this weekend. He was inside of the top five in points, just a few points out of the championship lead, and this is definitely going to be it. Have a huge impact on his championship efforts, and he's probably not going to be able to rebound it from this due to the fact that there aren't many teams out there that are looking for drivers, especially ones that aren't that marketable, especially like Ron Hornaday, who barely got sponsorship to begin with this year with a race-to-race deal by Rheem, who also sponsors James Buescher in the Nationwide Series.
Kyle?
Yeah, this is a really complicated situation here. You know, it's unfortunate for Ron Hornaday. You know, this is the first time he's competed for a championship since 2011, before the whole Bush incident. And, you know, it's tough because for him, you know, for what he's been through the last couple of years, you know, going to NTS Motorsports and then being let go at the end of the season last year and then heading over to Turner Scott, it's been a roller coaster ride for Ron Hornaday. I mean, I've spent a lot of his career, you know, he spent all those years at Kevin Harvick Incorporated, now possibly not even having a ride this weekend. And the comment about the other two guys, I mean, you know, with Ben Kennedy, with all due respect, I mean, his mom's a France. I mean, you know, they have money. I mean, you can't argue that. And for Cameron Haley, I mean, it's a great opportunity, but I think they have the support this weekend to run that race. And it's good to see someone like Cameron Haley running that truck, to see that making his debut this weekend. But like I said, it's a bad deal for Ron Hornaday.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's just a bad deal all around at the end of the day, because you have Ron running for a championship. He's out of a ride. But then again, like, you have a young guy in Cameron Haley getting the opportunity that he clearly deserves. And it's very interesting how Turner Scott Motorsports is going about this, especially at this point in the year. Yeah, Cameron Haley is doing great. He's second in points right now in the K&M Pro Series East. He finished second in K&M Pro Series West last year for win. But it's very different in the K&M Pro Series East, and he has only 8 top tens this year in 14 races. And a lot of that is due to bad luck, obviously, considering the whole series is on short tracks for the most part. But at the same time, Ron Hornaday, there is not a better asset to find sponsorship than to go out there and win a title and compete for wins every single week. Ron Hornaday Jr. is doing just that every week. And you can see that he wasn't too confident in the fact that he was going to run a full season. So I think the whole team knew this was coming. But at the same time, they've been running better and better every single week. And 13 races into a 22-race season, this is uncalled for to get rid of your best driver at this point in the year. I'm sorry. But you have a team that's running part-time with inexperienced drivers. They are not going to bring as much money as you would have from a championship-winning driver.
Glenn?
Yeah, this is kind of a surprise, really, because Turner Scott Motorsports, I don't want to call them the Hendrick Motorsports of the Nationwide Series, but they sort of are because they're always fast, they're always up there. I mean, next to JR Motorsports, they're probably the second most competitive team in the series that we have right now. And in the Truck Series, since they're getting rid of a truck, I hope that that's not a sign of things to come, because, you know, if they close down one truck, it's probably not too long before they start closing down another truck and then all of a sudden close the team down altogether.
No, that won't happen. I guarantee, no matter what, that is not going to happen, because this team has plenty of funding to continue, really. And they're going to be fine no matter what happens. It's just a matter of who's going to have the biggest ownership stake. But say if they were to close, That puts three less trucks on the Camping World Truck Series entry list. The Camping World Truck Series this weekend has, I believe, 29 trucks only. That's just abysmal for a series that has such competitive racing. We have to remember, a part of that is because of the new body style. So what's your guys' take on that? Do you think that the body style is why we have so few entries on every single weekend?
Well, I'm not sure yet, but I just want to add something quick to the Turner Scott thing. You know, with their stable of drivers, you have Scott Heckert, Kaz Grala, Ben Rhodes, Brandon Jones, and Cameron Haley. I mean, I think, you know, what I've been hearing is, I mean, that this could be a huge blow for their careers, unfortunately. And I'm not saying they won't find rides, but I mean, you know, they've had so many drivers stacked in those series that, you know, within the possibility of them. Of what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen yet, and I'm not going to say much about it because, you know, I have to learn more about it. But I think what's going to happen with that is, you know, I mean, you know, it leaves those drivers' futures uncertain. And, you know, and I just don't know I don't know. I mean, they have the talent, you know, like with Ben Rhodes probably going to win the championship this year unless something bearing terrible happens. And, you know, probably maybe Cameron Haley finishing second in the standings. But, I mean, I'm thinking is what's going to happen with them going down the road, maybe one or 2 years, depending what happens with that whole team.
Yeah, and who knows if they're even going to stay with Turner Scott Motorsports in the long run, because some of them don't even have that much sponsorship. A lot of them, like Cameron Haley, are sponsored by their family-run companies. So it's going to be a very critical time for the entire organization to figure out everything.
All right. Our next topic of the night is, Ty Dillon is to make his NASCAR Sprint Series debate this weekend. And I'm going to start with Kyle this time. Do you give us his thoughts on Ty Dillon, and how well do you think he's going to do this?
Okay, could you repeat that? I couldn't hear you there.
Yeah. Ty Dillon is to make his NASCAR Sprint Cup Series debate this weekend at Laramie Speedway, and give us your thoughts on how well you think he's going to do.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a good track for him to start at. You know, I know he made his nationwide debut in Indianapolis back in 2012, and he started third and finished third. But yeah, I think this is a good track for Ty Dillon because, you know, he has a success there. He actually won the last truck race held there back in 2012, and, you know, he's good on those, he likes those bigger tracks. And, you know, with the RCR equipment this week, even though it's, you know, it's Joe Falk owns the car, I think he's going to do all right. I just don't know yet. I expect maybe a top 20 out of him this week, and I know that's kind of going on the limb, but I think he can do it. And, you know, he has the equipment to do it, and I think he could definitely show it this week. And like I said, Atlanta's a good track for him, so I wouldn't be shocked if he has a top 20 or 25 run this weekend.
All right, and now we'll go over to NASCAR Joe.
Oh, gosh, stop. NASCAR, I like cussing it. Yeah, I think a top 20 is very respectable for Ty Dillon this weekend if he can get it. But at the same time, it's his first race, so we can't have too high of expectations for him, obviously. But I think he will get a top 20 finish at least.
Yeah, he will definitely get a top 20 finish. I mean, Ty Dillon does pretty well whatever you pick him in. And the track we're going to right now, Atlanta, that's a pretty good place to get another taste of Cup Series action.
I think it's definitely going to be interesting to see how Ty Dillon's going to do in the Sprint Cup Series debate. And, you know, he's doing really well in the trucks and Nationwide Series. And certainly going to be interesting to see how well he does.
I want to bring up one more thing. Now, this is for all of you. You know, with Ty Dillon making his Cup debut, I mean, out of the two of them, who do you think is more talent, Austin or Ty?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think Austin is the more consistent driver, but Ty is more capable of winning races. on a more consistent basis, but he doesn't run at up front as often as Austin does. Like in the Nationwide Series, for example, yeah, Ty has a win, but he's not as consistent as Austin was over the past 2 years.
All right, and then now we're going to go to another big topic that came out this week in the news item, is that NASCAR announced its three schedules across the Sprint Cup, Nationwide, and Camping World Truck Series from next season. And many people have opinions on this, and so I'm going to start off with Glenn to give us his thoughts, and then we'll go around the table with NASCAR Joe and Kyle.
Okay. Well, you know, I saw the schedules for the Camping World Truck Series and the NASCAR Nationwide Series and the Cup Series, and they're kind of interesting, but I think that the biggest or the biggest elephant in the room is the fact that they kind of clumped all the road courses, Watkins Glen, Mid-Ohio, and Road America, all into 1 month of August. Because the schedule that we have right now had Road America back in June, and then we would run Watkins Glen in Mid-Ohio. We ran that earlier this year. And, of course, in the Cup Series, Darlington got the precious Southern 500 back, and Atlanta's been moved back to March. But I will say one thing. Just from looking at some of the tweets, I'll put this in percentages, about 2% of the people that I saw were very satisfied with all the schedules, and then about 98% of all the other tweets, people were just not happy. I guess that you can't really please everybody. To me, I don't really have a big problem with some of these schedules, but I do see another tradition broken where the Nationwide Series and the Cup Series would run on the Friday and Saturday of the July 4th weekend, and we would have Sunday off to blow up some more stuff. But I'm not sure why they put the Subway Firecracker 250 on 4th of July that Saturday night, and now we have to go in the next day to run the Pepsi 400. So
they put it there. Can I tell you why? They put it there because, one, NBC always hosts the fireworks show, and since it's on a Saturday night, no one in the world is going to want to watch NASCAR on 4th of July if it's on a Saturday night. That was a very smart move on their part. Also, the fact that just the weather in general has been iffy there, they decided to move it to Sunday, which I do disagree with personally, because what if it rains out? Then the race is going to be on Monday and people have work. But there's only going to be 50,000 people sitting there, so it doesn't really matter because there's not going to be many fans there. Yes, there are going to be fans in the infield, but for those traveling to the track, it's not going to be that much of an inconvenience for them because most of them stay there for Sunday anyway, and they also stay for Monday since it's the middle of summer. It's 4th of July weekend, so it's not really that big of a deal when you think about it, and also it's NBC's first race. You want to go out with a bang. Nothing's going to be on Sunday night, but there are going to be things going on Saturday night because it's 4th of July. Why not try to get the maximum amount of ratings as you can on Sunday night when nothing else is going on? Where are they going to be competing with baseball on ESPN? Let's be for real. That gets about a 1.5 rating every weekend.
Okay, interesting. The last thing that I'll say is that moving Atlanta back to the beginning of the season, just after the Daytona 500, it was not a bad idea, but a lot of the followers I was talking to say that the weather over there is pretty much crappy over there in the wintertime. I think what they probably should have done with Atlanta is probably stuck it smack in the middle of maybe either April or like late March and early April. Because then you'll get some better weather. Because I guess that it rains over there a lot. But other than that, I'm pretty happy with what they did, and I'm glad they kind of fixed that giant gap between races in the Camping World Truck Series.
Yeah, well, we all of us in the NASCAR media cohort we're kind of disappointed about it in a way because, you know, it should they should have more short tracks for a series like the truck series. It's the body style itself is meant to capitalize on the short tracks, and you can obviously see it capitalizing on the short tracks. So you think about it, they should be adding a short track, not a mile on the half track. But it's good to see Atlanta back on the circuit for sure. But speaking of Billy Blue early yesterday a little bit, he was like, wow, this is my home track. It's back on. Maybe I should actually go back out there.
I mean, you know, with what you guys are saying, Joseph, I understand what people want more short tracks. I get that. Okay. I mean, I know it probably won't happen, and it didn't happen. excuse me. But, I mean, I like you guys have been saying, I think Atlanta back for the trucks, that's a fantastic move. I mean, I don't know why they dropped it in the first place. Maybe because of the Mossport race being on Labor Day weekend now. But, but you see, I mean, I like the trucks. I mean, Atlanta's such a nice track, you know. I mean, it's worn out, but you can run multiple lanes there from the high, low lane. It doesn't matter. And it still produces great racing, regardless. And actually, guys, I did not know about the Sunday night race for Daytona. I didn't know about that till you guys just told me that. I did not even realize that. But now the Saturday race for Daytona in July, would that be a night race or would that be a day race for Nationwide?
They're not sure yet from what I know, but I know that they're both going to be run on Saturday.
Okay. And, you know, I think, kind of like what you guys were saying about Daytona, I mean, you really think that NBC wants Kentucky to be their first race? I don't think so. You know, with Daytona leading off the schedule for NBC. And, I mean, another one I would have liked to see was another road course in the truck series. I mean, I would like to see that, you know, with Mossport, of course, being in August. And that's a great track, great facility. Produced some great racing. But I would have liked to see them maybe either go to Watkins or go to Road America at least. Because I think when I was looking at the schedule, you know, with Road America now going to August for the Nationwide Series instead of being in June, I looked at that. I was thinking maybe they could have paired the trucks that weekend as well, but maybe move Mossport to another weekend, another off weekend, maybe like in June or something. But didn't work out. So, but I applaud NASCAR for the Darlington date going back to Labor Day. That is tradition, and that I applaud them greatly for that because I enjoyed it when it was on Labor Day. I even remember the last race, Darlington race on Labor Day when Terry Labonte won. So and back to what I want to add what Glenn was saying about Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta, it has snowed in Atlanta before in March. I mean, that's the only issue I see is that. I think Nationwide qualifying was snowed out the one year, I think 2008. And, of course, the Blizzard of 93, the one year that postponed it a week. So, I mean, I don't have an issue with the schedule. I mean, of course you want to see more short tracks. I agree with that. And one more thing I want to add to the truck schedule that I would have liked to see was maybe move Chicagoland to June, because when you have just the Nationwide race in June, that's it. Maybe ARCA, and that's it for that weekend. You know, do something like back in 2012 when they had the truck series and the Nationwide on the standalone weekend. Make it a big weekend for the off weekend just to have those two series just highlight it. Because I remember watching that 2012 weekend. That was a great weekend. You know, they had the truck race on Saturday night, and they had the Nationwide on Sunday. But, you know, like I said, I don't make the decision there. But, you know, that's just a suggestion. But, I mean, I applaud NASCAR for what they did. And I kind of knew about the Atlanta thing. I mean, it was a possibility. I know somebody told me that, and that person was unnamed. But, I mean, I'm happy for that. But, you know, I would have liked to see maybe another race or two on the trucks. I think 25 is the ideal number for races because I don't know. I mean, it's nice they added a race, of course, in Atlanta, which will probably be a doubleheader with Nationwide, but you know, I think we're getting better. They're going in the right direction with the schedule, at least the truck series. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here these next couple of years with the TV deal and then with the Cup and the Nationwide Series as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, they definitely needed something. I think the truck series of Watkins Glen would be fantastic to watch.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing that they're not doing is because they have the K&M Pro Series East running there that weekend. I think that would be too many divisions to run in one weekend. But at the same time, they've done it before. They've run four or five divisions in one weekend. So I don't see really why they can't do it and just move the K&M Pro Series race to Thursday. That would be an ideal situation. Then you get the fans' experience a little bit more, you know? And also, the fact that they didn't add more short tracks is very concerning. This was the year that they could have put lies on that. They could have said, hey, look, we have a new deal with NBC. We need something to get fans going a little bit. Let's get a little something-something for the fans. Let's give them something to look forward to. Let's give them this new outlook on NASCAR. Let's get back to the roots. Let's do this. Let's do that. And they didn't do it. And that's very concerning. But at the same time, it's very understandable. Because look what you have to deal with. And just in making the schedule in of itself, it's very difficult to make a schedule in NASCAR because there's just so many different objectives you need to get to. You need to fix this. You need to fix that. And there's just so much to go to that you don't really know what is going to happen until it happens. So it's very difficult. But at the same time, I think a short track would have definitely been added during this whole ordeal, let's say. And the fact that they didn't do it is very, it's not good, but at the same time, they have more time to do it now. I'm sure they'll find somewhere to go in the next year or so. So I'm not too worried about it. But I think that Kyle's right. They definitely could have found somewhere else to go.
Yeah, Joseph, I just want to add quick to what you were saying about the Truck Series being on the Cup weekend. I mean, yeah, they have run divisions, a lot of divisions before. But when the Camping World Truck Series ran there from about 1996 to 2000, at least I think three or four of those years, they ran in conjunction with the Nation or Busch Series at the time. I think it was actually on the same weekend as when Sonoma used to run the Cup Series. So it was kind of like they had their own show and then the Cup Series had their own show. And what I was thinking, and I had this idea a few years ago about Watkins Glen, and it's probably not going to happen. You know, I'd like to see the IndyCar Series go back there, maybe run the boot like they used to. But, you know, maybe pair the trucks with that weekend and maybe even ARCA, you know, because ARCA has run there before one time. But, you know, I mean, that would be the ideal situation. But, you know, with IndyCar, the last time they ran there was July 4th, and that killed the attendance. And they haven't been back since, unfortunately. So, I mean, you know, but what you're saying, you know, it's going to be an interesting year in 2015. You know, it's going to see how, these next 2 years will pan out in NASCAR.
Yeah, and I think that in 2016, there is the possibility of having some short tracks added to the Nationwide Truck Series schedule. But I don't think we're going to be seeing any more mixing up with the Cup Series, really. However, I have heard rumblings that the Cup Series will start to switch up the Chase after next year, depending on how it works out, the new Chase format. So if it's a little iffy, the Chase format, or if NASCAR wants to switch things up, which is very possible because it's only a 2-3 month span, so they'll be able to fix it up, do what they need to do, get new factors in there, and just mix things up. It won't be different tracks, I don't think. I think the elimination race will be different is what you're going to start seeing.
All right. Some interesting discussions with the track situation. And our next topic is Brad Keselowski failed post-race technical inspection at Bristol on two other tracks. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting penalty, and so I'm going to send it off to NASCAR Joe to give us his thoughts on this.
Can you repeat what you said?
Brad Keselowski failed post-race inspection at Bristol in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. Just give us a little bit of your thoughts.
About his penalty?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, he won the race, which is huge, because he's now won in every single division in NASCAR, which is pretty darn impressive, if I say so myself. And this was a long time coming for Brad Keselowski. He's been racing in Truck Series for a very long time. It's his family team, and he grew up racing for his family team. So it was very emotional for him, but at the same time, he did get penalized, which it's not really a big deal because it wasn't a big penalty, obviously, but the crew chief was fined $5,000, Doug Granbaugh, and they were docked 10 championship owner points. That could hurt them down the stretch. They're battling with KTM's number 51 truck for the championship, for the owner's title, and that could cost them a lot down in the long run. But I don't think it's going to be that big of a factor.
I agree, Joseph. I mean, it's an issue. But what I thought was, going back to that race, was I thought about Michigan, about what, you know, with the BKR, Brad Keselowski Racing teams, kind of had that splitter problem that, you know, that NASCAR screwed up on them. I mean, if you guys remember that, but I thought about that, and I thought maybe, you know, I wonder if that penalty that they got was kind of like, you know, they had the right measurements, you know, the heights the next week, but then, you know, they got hit with the penalty. I thought that right after I heard about it. No, but aside from the penalties, I think for Brad Keselowski, it's a great win. He's been so close. I think he's finished runner up more than six times at least. You know, and the times he has, and when he has, you know, I think they said with him competing against Kyle Busch in a truck race, is that I think he's only finished I think twice better than him in all the races they've been in together with. So I think it's, you know, it's definitely a morale booster for that team, you know, and Ryan Blaney, of course, battling with the championship. He needs a good race, but these last weeks have not been the best for him, and you know, with Michigan and now with Bristol. So I think he needs a good weekend here in Mossport, you know, and also the 19 trucks have Alex Tagliani this weekend, making his truck debut. So, you know, he might be the one to beat, but we don't know yet until we go to practice on the weekend.
It's definitely not a big penalty when you look at it, but when you see how many points were taken away. That could hurt them down the road. In fact, I think that if they continue to run that truck, they're going to have to win a few more races just to stay within that hunt. Because if they continue to do a downward spiral after this penalty, they're going to miss out on the owner's title.
All right, and I think
it's been a really long time since he's been able to, you know, go victory in the Nationwide Series and the Sprinkle Series, but, you know, to go so long without a Truck Series win was kind of surprising, but, you know, he finally got in the, you know, it's definitely good for him to get that after all his family history in the series. All right, we're kind of going to go into a topic from last week, since we didn't have a show. Carl Edwards' son, Joe Gibbs Racing, grabbed the number 19 Aris Toyota, which Aris will come on board the car for 17 races. And then they also add Daniel Suarez to their Nationwide Series lineup. I'm going to go with Glenn first on this topic to give us his thoughts.
Carl Edwards joining Joe Gibbs Racing, that was the worst kept secret in the garage area, but it's kind of interesting that they'll have the 11 and then the 18, 19, and then 20. It's kind of cool to have the numbers so close together. But now this also raises the question, will Carl Edwards have the debut season Matt Kenseth did? Because we remember back in 2013, Kenseth jumped over to Joe Gibbs and boom, started winning races right off the bat. Boom, finished top five all over the place. there's only a handful of races that he finished lower than lower than 25th, and you know, just shy of the championship to Jimmy Johnson. So now I want to see if he will have if Carl Edwards will have the same season Matt Kenseth did. And now that Edwards has this, you know, officially announced and all that kind of stuff, I would say watch out for Edwards, because I have a feeling that he's going to start doing the tear here, because we're coming to some good racetracks that Edwards has done pretty well at.
Kyle?
I think it's a good move, you know, with what's going on at Roush Fenway Racing. I think it was a good time for him to get out of there. You know, and then this came back up in 2011 when he was in a contract year, but, you know, he re-signed with Roush and Ford, and he's been there every year since this year, and then up, you know, next year he'll be leaving, so. And I just don't know about his immediate success, because JGR is lacking some power right now on the super speedways. They're getting better at it, but, you know, they're trying to get up there with the Hendrick and the Penske teams. And I think that they're going to get there at some point. And, you know, we saw it last year, and I think they can get back to that. And, you know, and about Daniel Suarez, I know he only run one nationwide race. I know he has a boatload of talent, you know, in the K&N series. I just don't know about that move, to be honest with you. I know he's capable of it. I just don't know how he's going to handle just running these races, because, like I said, he's a lot of talent, but I just don't know. I just don't want to see him end up like a Joey Logano, being rushed into it too fast and then not producing the results. And, you know, I know it's his dream, but I don't want to – you don't want to see a driver like that. Kind of like, you know, you want to see a driver succeed like that, you know, coming in a nationwide full-time and also running some part-time trucks for Kyle Busch Motorsports. So I'm going to be interested to see how he does and whether he produces the results. Or, or they bring him up too soon. That's going to be interesting for me to watch next year. And also, you know, one more thing with Bubba Wallace, Darrell Wallace Jr., you know, what his future is going to hold, you know, if he will be in a full-time nationwide car next year for Joe Gibbs Racing as well.
All right. And I can't remember if we went to Glenn or Joseph first, but why don't you guys give us your thoughts?
Yeah, I just think that Carl Edwards going and gives this amazing deal for both sides. Yeah, they don't have all the sponsorships secured yet, but at the same time, it's definitely a good deal. As Kyle and Glenn both said, it was time for him to leave Roush. He hit his climax. He didn't win a championship. It's as simple as that. In this sport, if your team is starting to not produce at the level you think it's capable of, it's time to leave. No, JGR is not performing extremely well this year, but they are definitely an improvement over Roush for sure. And the fact that Roush is struggling like they are at tracks that they've been so well at in the past is a concern for everyone around. I interviewed Carl Edwards in Dover in May, and he told me, he's like, look, we're not performing. The ride height package is not clicking with the team. We're going to have a lot of different shakeups going around. He was very committed to Ford at the time, that out, because I think that's the biggest thing about this. He's leaving Ford, and Ford was a major part of him getting the opportunity with Roush Fenway Racing to begin with, and they were a big part of him staying at Roush Fenway Racing a few years ago when Gibbs tried to get him then in, with Matt Kenseth. So now he's returning to race with Matt Kenseth, who both of them didn't get along a few years ago. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with that. Maybe you have a little mix-up here and there, but I don't think anything's going to be bad. I think this is going to be a very good partnership.
All right, and I think it's going to be very interesting as well, and it certainly leads to the question if Edward can do what Kenseth did when he first went over Joe Gibbs Racing. And our next topic tonight on the discussion docket is Matt Kenseth debates 7-6 series on the race against bullying. First of all, I'm going to go over to Kyle to give us thoughts on that.
Okay, can you repeat that? I couldn't hear you there. I apologize.
It's fine. Matt Kenseth debates children's books on the race against bullying.
Yeah, I think that's a good deal. I mean, I saw the pictures with him, and I forget who else was reading. But I did see it. I think I'm not sure who it was. Maybe you guys could elaborate on that. But I think it's good for him. It's good for the kids, and you know, it's going for a good cause as well. You know, writing his own children's book. So I think Joseph knows a little bit about that. But you know, you have to talk.
Yeah,
and we're going to go to our old man NASCAR Joe, because he is dead or something like that, wrote a children's book as well. And old man, why don't you give us your thoughts on this, since you know some things or two about
it. Yeah, I think Matt Kenseth's book is a great idea. It's a very good cause for the reason that he wrote the book. And it's very good to see that about bullying, especially. I know Kyle and I have had those experiences where we have been bullied, unfortunately. But it makes you become who you are. And as Matt Kenseth said, he's been bullied in the past when he was in high school. People made fun of him for wanting to become a racer. And guess what happened? He became a racer, and I guarantee you, he is more successful than anyone has ever entered that high school, wherever he went and wherever you grew up. And as Kyle said, yeah, I'm writing a book, and you guys should go out and buy it eventually when it comes out in a few months.
Hopefully I get my free copy in the mail. But anyway, I'm going to go over to Glenn now for his thoughts.
I like the fact that so many drivers do their own children's books, because, you know, that's a great way to get the kids into the sport. It's also a great way to kind of, like, take a hot-button issue that bullying is and apply it to racing and all that kind of stuff. And I actually wonder if, you know, with Matt Kenseth doing this, if it'll prompt the other drivers to release their own children's books. I mean, I would love to see what Dale Earnhardt Jr. brought out, because obviously, you know, you can't put Beer, Wings, and Washington Redskins in your book, but I'm sure that he would probably do a great children's book.
That is interesting, and that kind of gives a different side of things from the drivers, and so, you know, I think it's great that they're helping out that issue, and hopefully it's successful for them. So this weekend, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series is in action at the Atlanta Speedway with the NASCAR Nationwide Series and the Truck Series at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. I'm going to throw it over to Glenn this time, give us his thoughts on this weekend's race and what Phil thinks we see in all three races.
Well, Atlanta Motor Speedway, what can we say about it? It's a fast 1.5 mile track. It's probably not as fast as Texas is, but it still provides a really, really good race. Look for the cars to be like bottom feeders and also to run that top side. The middle groove never really came in too much during the races, but I also think too we may see an old fashioned last lap pass or the old fashioned race coming down to the line. Now, it's 325 laps for the Cup Series, and so pit strategy is going to be key. And it's also going to be fuel mileage as well, because that race doesn't have long caution periods or does it breed cautions. It has long green flag periods. So definitely look for some continuance to, you know, be saving fuel towards the end of the race. And two drivers that I think you may want to watch out for, you definitely got to watch out for Jimmy Johnson. He knows how to get around this place. He knows how to win here. But also keep an eye out on Kyle Busch. This particular track suits him. And hopefully, if he worked out those issues with Dave Rogers back at Bristol, they'll probably either find themselves in the winner's circle, or they might find themselves at the kids' place having a milk and cookies meeting.
Going over to Kyle next.
Yeah, I just want to add what Glenn was saying quick. Kyle Busch's two finishes on the other two tracks that are not paved, California and Kentucky. Win at California and second at Kentucky, just saying. But, you know, I think what you need to look at least for the Cup and the Nationwide, and I'm going to tell you what, this driver I'm going to mention can make a really big impact. I know his luck hasn't been on his side lately. He's probably had probably one of the best starts going into mid-June and then just dropped. You know, just had some issues. I have to say Kyle Larson is definitely going to be one you're going to want to watch. He loves those kind of racetracks. I mean, he said it himself. I've seen him say it. He loves worn-out racetracks. You know, Atlanta hasn't been repaved since 1997 when they redid the configuration. So I think you're going to want to keep an eye on Larson. I mean, it could really be a breakout race for him, both races. I mean, he could have a possibility of sweeping the weekend, to be honest with you. That's how strongly I feel about it because he likes those tracks. He likes running the high line. And you know, what the nice part about Atlanta is you can move all around. I mean, if your car's not working on the bottom, you can go on the top. You know, I've seen guys like Michael Waltrip and Dale Jr. on the Highland and love that. And I think horsepower comes into play as well. You know, you see the Penske's and the Hendricks. I'm going to be interested to see how JGR is going to do this weekend, you know, up against those guys. Because like I said, they've been slowly but surely starting to catch them. You know, you saw it at Indianapolis. I mean, they were 2, 3, and 4. And, you know, I know Hendrick Carr won in Jeff Gordon, but, you know, they're getting there. And what I think about the racing at Atlanta and what Glenn was saying about pit strategy, it's mainly fuel mileage. I mean, you take 2 tires at Atlanta, you're a sitting duck, okay? You need 4 tires. That's how it works. I mean, I haven't really ever seen races run on 2-tire strategies. It just hasn't worked. I mean, there's people who've tried it, but they've been passed. You know, when you put on 4 fresh tires at Atlanta, I mean, you feel like Superman. And I think, you know, when you bring in the fuel mileage, I have seen it before. I think I've seen it in all 3 series there, and it's happened before. So, going to Mossport for the trucks, I mean, bearing what happened last year with Chase Elliott and Ty Dillon, I honestly think Chase Elliott had a better truck, and I think Chase had the inside. Okay, that's my take on that. You know, and Ty came out. And then, you know, you had the thing with Max Pappas and Mike Skeen, of course. You remember as that as well. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting race because, you know, you don't have those same guys, you know, those contenders last year. No Chase Elliott, no Ty Dillon, no Max Pappas, no Mike Skeen, not even Chad Hockenbrough, who hasn't even raced this year because of no deal. So, you know, you see those guys. None of them are in the race. You know, you have, and this week you have Alex Tagliani running for Brad Keselowski Racing. You have Andrew Ranger going to be running the race as well. But I'm just going to be interested to see. And also, like I said earlier, Cameron Haley. I mean, he has good on road courses. I've seen him in K&N. He is good on road courses. So, I mean, don't count those guys out. But I'm just going to see how how the truck regulars are going to stack up against them. Because, I mean, going into there, I mean, the favorite so far, I mean, like I said, I think it's Alex Tagliani, to be honest with you. I know he's never ran. I don't know. He might have tested a truck where he's going to test a truck. But, you know, he has that road course experience, and he's had some close calls, almost winning the race. Of course, Road America, you know, we're running out of gas. And, Mid-Ohio, he didn't really have the best car. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And then, you know, with Atlanta, like I said, I mean, you can see a surprise winner. You can see, like, a guy like Casey Kane or Greg Biffle or Jamie McMurray make their way in the chase. Just because Atlanta's kind of a wild card. I mean, there's comers and goers throughout the race. And you may see guys who lead the first 100 laps, and then you don't see them for the rest of the night. That's just how it is, you know. And with it going the daytime and the nighttime as well, you have to adjust on the car. And I remember the first year they did this with the Labor Day race in 2009. There were comers and goers all night. You know, I mean, there was better guys in the longer runs and better guys in the shorter runs. And of course, the shorter run car wound up winning the race, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. And, of course, that last probably the last time you may see a Cup run night race in Atlanta.
Aaron, and now we're going to go to Joseph.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add from what everyone said, but I do think you're right. I think that the Cup race is going to be very wild. The Truck Series race is going to be very interesting, too. I'm looking forward to seeing Alex Tagliani in that 19 truck. But I do think we're going to have a surprise winner this weekend. I know that John Hunter Nemechek has been very focused on getting ready for this race. And there are some guys out there that you may not think are road course racers, you're going to see that Bahamut this weekend. Brendan Newberry raced the K&M Pro Series race at Watkins Glen and the Nationwide Series race. So he's definitely prepared for this event, as are a couple of other drivers. Andrew Ranger, as you mentioned, is in this. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. But I think it's going to be essential for some of the drivers in the Truck Series running for a championship, like Johnny Sauter, Ryan Blaney, Matt Crafton, to run well this weekend. Just don't wreck. They need to have a clean weekend. And as for the Nationwide race, I'm going to go with Brian Scott. I think that this is going to be a good weekend for him. The entire RCR team is running very well the intermediate track this year in the Nationwide Series. They have a few wins, and he's been very close a lot of times. And if he doesn't win this weekend, guess what? We're going to one of his best tracks next weekend at Richmond. And it's going to be interesting to see him race at these next two tracks. And then the championship. Boy, oh boy, do we have a great championship out going on. We have five drivers duking it out for the championship. And you know what? It's going to be go right down the wire. You have Ty Dillon, Regan Smith, Chase Elliott, Elliott Sadler. Well, these guys are battling for the title. And you know what? Any of them, if they could get on a little hot streak and win two, three races out of the final 12, they're going to be right there in title contention. Right now, I think it's going to be very hard to beat Chase Elliott. He's so good and consistent at those intermediate tracks. No one expected him to be this good. We expected him to be very good, but we expect him to be this good. And it's showing that down the stretch that if he just outruns his competition by one, two positions every weekend, he's going to have this championship locked up and sealed. Now, as for the Cup Series, it's a very important weekend. We have only two races left to decide who's going to be in the chase. Four spots are left. Really two when you think about it, because Matt Kenseth is well but locked in, as are a couple others. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens this weekend. But I do think that Kenseth has a chance to win. He did run well at Bristol, but the one guy I'm looking at is Jamie McMurray. He is very confident about this weekend coming off of a great run at Bristol, and I think that he has a chance to go out there this weekend and win the race. Then there's guys like Casey Kane, Marcos Ambrose. The list goes on and on, really. Cliff Boyer, Greg Biffle, Ricky Stenhouse, Ryan Newman, Paul Menard. All of these guys need a win. And you know what? All of them have a good history at this track. So it's going to be interesting to see what is going to happen.
All right. And interesting thoughts on this weekend. And now I'm going to turn over to Glenn for the Open Wheel Report.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, because we didn't have a show last weekend due to the rained-out Truck Series race, there's going to be two races to review here with Wisconsin and Sonoma. We don't have any highlight reels for it, but we do have the results from it. The ABC Supply Wisconsin 250 at the Milwaukee Mile, otherwise known as the Milwaukee Indy Fest, was 2 weeks ago, and it was won by Willpower, and it was a Penske 1-2 finish. So here's the finishing order. Let's see what your favorite driver finished. Will Power was the race winner. Juan Pablo Montoya was second. And Tony Kanaan rounded out the podium spot. Scott Dixon finished fourth. Joseph Newgarden finished fifth. Ryan Briscoe finished sixth. Simon Pagenaud finished seventh. Eighth was Mikhail Aleshin. Ninth, Ed Carpenter. And rounding out the top 10 spots was Jack Hawksworth. Elio Castroneves finished 11th. 12th, Sebastian Bourdais. 13th, Marco Andretti. 14th, Graham Rahal. 15th, Takuma Sato. 16th, Charlie Kimball. 17th, Justin Wilson, 18th, Sebastian Saavedra, 19th, James Hinchcliffe, Carl Suertis finished 20th, 21st was Ryan Hunter-Reay, he fell out of the race due to mechanical failure, Carlos Munoz was involved in an accident and finished in 22nd spot. So with Milwaukee out of the way, the Verizon IndyCar Series went to Sonoma Raceway for the GoPro Grand Prix of Sonoma, and it had a surprise winner behind it as Scott Dixon took home another victory this year. Let's see how they finished out there. Scott Dixon won the race. Ryan Hunter-Reay with a much-needed podium finished second. And Don Pagenaud finished third. Takuma Sato fourth. Juan Pablo Montoya fifth. Sixth was Joseph Newgarden. Seventh, Mikhail Elishan. Eighth, Marco Andretti. Ninth was Justin Wilson. And Will Power, the dominant car all day, finished back in 10th. Sebastian Bourdais finished 11th. James Hinchcliffe finished 12th. Thirteenth was Tony Kanaan. 14th, Mike Conway. 15th, Jack Hawksworth. 16th, Sebastian Saavedra. 17th, Ryan Briscoe. 18th, Elio Castroneves. 19th, Carlos Munoz. Graham Rahal finished 20th. He was leading at the time, but unfortunately, fuel strategy caught him out there. Charlie Kimball finished 21st, and Carlos Huertas had something blow on his car, so he finished 22nd. So now, folks, here it is. We are at the final race of the year. That's right. The Verizon IndyCar Series comes out to Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California, which I happen to live 30 minutes from. It is the MAV-TV American Real 500 from Auto Club Speedway. This 2 mile D-shaped oval has been perfect to hold the season finale for the IndyCar Series here. Look for some high speeds, and also look for some Indianapolis 500 style racing. With the downforce package that we run right now, it will basically scatter everybody around the racetrack, but everybody will be looking forward to seeing the free wide action. Now, take note of this time, people. Last year, the gates opened up at noon, and the race took place at 6 o'clock. Well, this year it's completely different. The gates are going to open up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday, and then the race will begin at 7:15. The reason why for the late start is because they want to make sure that the sun is gone and that there's no glare. So prepare to stay up until like around 11 o'clock Pacific time, which would be about 2 o'clock Eastern time, to check out who will be the champion. And there's four drivers in this whole hunt. Don Pagenaud, Elio Castroneves, Ryan Hunter-Reay, and Will Power. Only one of these drivers has a championship, and that's Ryan Hunter-Reay. The rest of them do not. So we could see a first-time champion, or we could see a repeat champion on Saturday night, but we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. So make sure that you tune in to NBC Sports Network at 6 to see the MAV-TV American Real 500. So now here is some more news and notes from IndyCar. Guess what, everybody? We now have another date selected. The Indy Grand Prix of Louisiana has an official date in the 2015 schedule. It will debut April 10th through the 12th. It will feature a three-day festival combining Louisiana's culture, including live music acts, entertainment, and local cuisine, with the excitement of the Verizon IndyCar Series. And I believe the Cooper Tire Indy Lights Series will also be racing there, too. And tickets will be going on sale very, very soon. And speaking of tickets going on sale, Texas Motor Speedway announced its dates. It'll come back on June 4th through the 6th. And tickets for that event will be going on sale October 27th. So if you want to reserve your tickets at the Wild Asphalt Circus, you can call them at 817-215-8500. That is 817-215-8500. Or visit TexasMotorSpeedway.com to get your tickets to go out to Fort Worth, Texas. Also, we also need to put a period on this. Gabby Chavez in the Cooper Tire Indy Lights Series took home the championship after he was tied in the points, and he ended up getting the tiebreaker because he had the most second-place finishes ahead of second place. So congratulations to Gabby Chavez, and also congratulations to Jack Harvey, who swept the weekend in the Sonoma doubleheader. Now, let's go over to the F1 series where they race the Belgian VP in Spa, Formula One Shell Belgian VP. And at the front row, it was the Petronas Mercedes team of Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg at the front. But a little contact from Rosberg sent Lewis Hamilton to retire from the race. But who would be the one that would end up winning? It would be Daniel Ricciardo, who just nabbed his third win of the year at the Belgian GP. So let's take a look at the finish order in there and see what your favorite driver finished. There's also a new name in the list. Daniel Ricciardo won the race. Nico Rosberg finished second. And how about Valtteri Bottas finishing third? Another podium for the young Finland driver. Kimi Raikkonen finished fourth. Sebastian Vettel finished fifth. Jensen Button sixth. Fernando Alonso finished seventh. Eighth was Sergio Perez. Ninth, Daniel Cabot. And tenth was Nico Hülkenberg to round up the top 10 and point spots. Further on back we go. Jean-Éric Vergne finished 11th. Kevin Magnussen finishes 12th. Felipe Massa finished 13th. Adrian Sutil finished 14th. Esteban Gutierrez finished 15th. And now comes the cars that finished the lap off the pace or ended up falling out of the race. Max Chilton, who got his ride back, finished 16th. Marcus Ericsson in the Caterham Renault finished 17th. Jules Bianchi in the other Marussia finished 18th due to a gearbox failure. Lewis Hamilton was retired from the race as well. Roman Grosjean and Pastor Maldonado ended up having some troubles as well. And new driver Andre Lattier in the Caterham Renault couldn't even complete a single lap before his power unit went out. So with Belgium out of the way, what's next for F1? Well, what's next for F1 is one of my favorite races. In less than 8 days, the F1 series will be racing at the Autodromo de Monza. It is the Formula One Gran Primo d'Italia 2014 at Monza. This is my all-time favorite road course, and we will have a big preview of this race next week. But it's going to be a lot of fun to see the F1 series come here. But also, we need to keep in mind that this could be the last race for Monza if Bernie Ecclestone has his way. So hopefully that is incorrect, and hopefully that we continue to go to Monza, because if we lose Monza, we lose a huge chunk of fans. Also, some interesting news and notes that we need to get to here really quickly is that Greece is looking to host an F1 race. Bernie Ecclestone is going over there to see if they have any money, number one, but also number two, where would they hold an F1 race? And probably the earliest that we would see F1 in Greece, should this deal go through, would be the 2016 or possibly 2017, which is either one or the other. All right, there are six GPs left, or after Italy, there are six GPs left on the F1 circuit. We have the Formula One Singapore Airways Singapore GP. That's coming up in late September. Then it's the Formula One Japanese Grand Prix from Suzuka, Japan. And then it's the brand new Russian Grand Prix that'll take place in the Olympic Village of Sochi. Then they come over here to the United States for the Formula One United States GP, a Circuit of the Americas. The first 2 years that we ran the race here, it got rave reviews from fans and reporters alike. Then it is the Formula One Grande Prêmio Petrobras do Brasil 2014 at Interlagos in São Paulo, Brazil. And then we finish up the season on November 23rd in the 2014 Formula One Etihad Airways Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. So now we come to the very end of the show. We want to thank everybody for tuning in and for getting your news and fixes and all that kind of stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at IndyCarGL2488, as well as on Facebook, facebook.com/IndyCarGL2488. Just like I said earlier, I will not be out at Fontana, so hopefully you guys can get me some good pictures and some good video, and I would love to see what it is. So, all of us, to all of you, you've been listening to Speedway Digest here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody. And happy Labor Day.